You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Well, we're having quite a day. Pete Carroll coming up in 90 minutes. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Download the show as well. Go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I haven't looked up our Google Podcasts. Do they do ratings too over there? Should I look that up?
Let's just avoid those ones.
Oh, they're not as good?
I don't know. I just think it's easier.
I like the Apple ones. Like, it's fun. You check back there now and again, and you get like the nice reviews of like, hey, this is so great. It's so good to have Salk back, this, that, and the other. It's like, oh, it always makes me feel good. And the next one's just like, the show is the worst. Salk is such a jerk. I'm like, well, why do you listen and then review it? I don't understand. Like, you took your time to go do that? I appreciate it, I guess. I appreciate the reviews. So if you go to, I'm a little obsessed with it. You can go to the Apple Podcast. Subscribe, please, so that you get the show delivered to you every day, all 4 hours. You can go listen to what you want. It is 8 o'clock, day after a game. That means time for some takeaways.
Takeaways.
All right, let's start off here. I was convinced, at least in real time, that Sidney Jones had the pick. So was Pete.
In my mind, no doubt. I don't know how in the world, the way that happened, the timing of that, you could ever. Maybe you guys saw it better than I did. I didn't see the replays other than when I saw it on the big board.
Well, I did. And then on the replay, I said, that's not a catch.
Oh.
Did you?
I don't know. I couldn't see from the 327, my guy.
Well, they put it up on the big board. Like, to me, he had the ball trapped against the ground.
He used the ground to catch
it. Yeah. And look, I wish that play, if he makes it, maybe saves your season. Like, I don't think that's an exaggeration. And I know it's hard to crush a team when, like, one play and that inch is enough to maybe turn around their season. But unfortunately, that was one of they just keep not making those plays. I don't think that they got jobbed by the refs. I think, unfortunately, it was pretty clear that ball hit the ground. And you know, you got to force enough plays like that to have them go your way. There's so many close plays in the NFL that you've got to force so many opportunities for them to go the right way. And unfortunately, they don't force enough of them, and that one didn't go in their direction. I definitely thought he trapped the ball. Sorry.
Takeaways.
Okay, that entire game, that's Rashad Penny in a nutshell. Shows off his speed on the first play of the game.
Motion across the formation is Lockett, the turn and hand to Penny, and he fires straight ahead. He's off to the races and across the 40-yard line. Welcome back, Rashad Penny.
18 yards on the play, but of course, doesn't actually break it. Gets tripped up just at the last moment. Then gets hurt on the play, hurts his hamstring, carries only one more time the rest of the game. It's all of Rashad Penny. The tempting speed, the not quite great run, the injury, the failure. It's just too bad. It's unfortunately turned into a waste of a first-round pick, and it's too bad. I do think he's talented. You see it on that play. He is fast. He does have, and at his size, the size and speed combo is fairly unique, but he can't put it together, and he can't stay healthy long enough in order to make that work.
Welcome back, and see you later.
It's unbelievable. I couldn't believe he was gone. I didn't see that he had gotten hurt. A couple of minutes later, what in the world happened? They started him in the game. He got the start over Alex Collins. And one play later, right back to Alex Collins again because Penny was hurt. Oh, it's so sad. I was so ready to come in here and tell you guys how wrong everybody was.
He almost broke it, too. Like, I really did think he was going to make it all the
way. I did, too. It's really too bad. How hurt do you think he would have been if he'd had to run the rest of the 80 yards?
Oh, that would have been awful if he pulled up short.
He's just grabbing his hammy as he's trying to make the end zone. My gosh.
Takeaways.
All right, tell me who had this in your pregame prediction list. Colt McCoy was better at escaping pressure in this game than Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
True fact.
Oh, yeah.
He's a year older, was playing with an injured pec, was flat out better at avoiding pressure in the game. That's unbelievable.
Third down and 7. McCoy shotgun snap. Blitz is coming. McCoy breaks free. He makes a connection. It's Ertz. First down and then some. All the way down inside the 20.
Ugh.
The Seahawks blitz. They couldn't get home. McCoy steps up. and throws to Ertz for 20 yards, and man, does that hurt.
Yeah, his legs were a factor in this game. Maybe it was because of the quality of the rushers coming after him or getting home with four versus blitzing or whatever, but his legs absolutely showed up in this game, and Russ's did not. That completion of Ertz on that was the final drive, right, that play? You make a stop there, you get to him on that third down play, you maybe have a shot at it. I mean, we'll see what Russell does. I mean, it's entirely possible the offense would have continued to be inept, but that was your best chance right there. That was like a long field goal from that point. If they'd stopped him there, it would have been like a 50-yard field goal. They'd already missed a couple. They might have even punted, try to stick it deep, and then see what, you know, at that point you're down three. You got plenty of opportunities to win the game there. But unfortunately, his legs were a factor. Yours weren't. I can't believe how many times Russ was just sacked in the backfield without any of the, like, trademark Russell escapability. Like, there's just none of it.
Did you see somebody updated the Wikipedia page right after the game, too, for the Seahawks?
Is it one of these owned by Colt McCoy deals?
Yeah. It's quick.
I think people have maybe gone a little far with that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of done with that. Okay, I got you. Wacky Wikipedia joke.
Takeaways.
Well, Pete often talks about explosive plays and third downs, right, for his defense. How do you win a game? Explosive plays and third downs. They didn't do either very well. They gave up a bunch of big plays in this one, and then perhaps were 7 of 14 on third down. We just played one of those as Zach Ertz was a major factor in this game. You can't win like that. Especially while your offense is in the kind of funk that they're in. Jordan Brooks talked about it after the game.
The short passes. We want to stay deep. And so, you know, make sure we don't give anything over the top and then rally to the short passes.
Yeah, but you got to actually rally to the short passes. That Bobby Wagner one is going to stick with me for a while. There have been a couple of those. Like, I know that there's a Bobby Wagner defense group out there that will defend Bobby, whatever he does. And I don't think he's like the problem on the team, but he's your highest paid player. When I see him get carried 5 yards deep into the end zone by A.J. Dillon last week for a huge score, when I see him have the running back yesterday dead to rights 6 yards before the first down marker and get beat to the sticks, he got shook. And then Kerry Hyder tackles the guy forward. Next thing you know, it's a first down. Instead of getting off the field on 3rd and 10, you're not. There's a couple of your, and by the way, on that third down that we just played where McCoy got hit Ertz, Bobby blitzed on that play, just got blown up. Just nothing, washed out. There's two of your 7, right? Like, you got to find way. Yeah, I appreciate that Jordan Brooks sounds frustrated, but that's the scheme, man. And you were specifically brought here because of your speed and coverage. And it's not showing up. It's not showing up.
Takeaways.
Hey, where's D. Eskridge? We put out an APB on D. Eskridge. Is that one of the questions your guy's asking back there? Where's D. Eskridge?
Yes.
Where is he? Was he in the game? I saw him return a kick. I mean, he kneeled on it, but like I saw him out there for returning a kick. Where's D. Eskridge? How can you win with your top picks and investments without them making contributions? How do you win with Rashad Penny having 2 carries? How do you win with LJ Collier scratched? How do you win with Bobby Wagner largely invisible and beaten to that third down marker? How do you win with D. Eskridge not playing? How do you win with Jamal Adams? Hey, he's better in this one, but a huge PI in the final drive, no big plays. Lockett's like the one big name on this team who just shows up and does his job, does his thing, no matter what. I just don't think it's fair. You can't ask your quarterback and a bunch of role players to win every game because all of your top picks and big investments don't do squat. It's not a realistic way to win football games. Do you have to hit on some of those guys? Jordan Brooks didn't do much. I know he had a bunch of tackles, but when you watch the game, he's like, it's always a tackle after a catch.
Not this time. Not this time. You're wrong. Not this time.
Thank you. Am I wrong? I know they're wrong on all these picks. It really is crazy. Like, as we go through this, I'm sorry. Like, you can't, Moore, you gave a good argument earlier. You did. You fought the good fight. Like, you made some good points about some of the talent they have on this team. It's not enough. Come on. Every team has some talent. Even the Lions have some talent. Their running back's pretty good. Like, they've got some talent. They don't have a win, but they've got some talent. Like, I see NFL. You got to hit on your top picks. when the Seahawks have had first-round picks, they've not spent them well. And when they've traded out and had a second-round pick, then that guy hasn't been very good. Their top pick in the draft, when's the last time one was good? Jordan Brooks is by far the best they've had in, like, 8 years. Think about that. Their top picks in the draft, when you go through them, LJ Collier, Malik McDowell, Rashad Penny, Jordan Brooks. Who am I missing
in there? Okung is the last time?
That they really had a great first pick? It might be.
Oof.
Like, then they've had some success in the middle rounds and this and that, but even some of their second picks. I mean, Jermaine Ifedi was their first pick. I guess Carpenter was in there. He at least started for you for a few years. It's really, like, pretty remarkable how many of their top picks have done jack. And I know
where
that
was Jokel? Where'd you say Jokel?
Oh, he was a signing.
Okay.
They signed him. They spent money on Luke Jokel.
Yeah, quite a bit of money.
He was terrible. He had been the number two overall pick in the draft, but not for them, for Jacksonville. You can't win if you're not getting contributions, big-time contributions from the guys that are expected to give it. And when your free agent signings don't do that and your top picks don't do that, I don't know how it's realistic to expect your roster to do much of anything. Yeah, you've got Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, but Russell can't be asked to do everything. It just doesn't work.
Takeaways.
Kristen Michael, throw him in there. He was their top pick that year?
Third rounder, I think.
Gosh, he did more than poor Rashad Penny's done.
He was a second round.
I think that was their first pick, though, that year. I don't think they had a first round pick that year.
2013, yep.
Sheesh. Hey, I'm impressed with Pete Carroll coming back to the podium. Seriously, I there's a lot to rip on the Seahawks for today. There is. Pete was clearly frustrated, didn't have answers after the game. I told you I was watching it on mute, and it was just amazing how many times his palms are up, just like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. And eventually, I'm sure he got tired of saying that. I mean, as somebody with a temper that they're not always like 100% proud of how well they control it, somebody who like can feel like the heat rising in your face and you're flush and you're getting embarrassed, I understand walking away and leaving. I feel like I would have done the same thing. Like, you know what? I can't be here anymore. You just walk away.
And then like faintly in the distance.
I heard the song on the way to the game yesterday.
Turn around.
Bonnie Tyler?
Yeah.
It's a great song.
I mean, it's no Sarah McLachlan, so I apologize.
Have you ever seen the video they did of that song where they're like, it's like the literal interpretation of what's happening?
Yes.
Yeah. So funny, man.
The acted
it's
out
so
version.
Funny.
Yep.
Yes. It's really, really funny.
But yeah, I was happy to see him come back.
I thought that was the right thing to do. Good for Pete. He came back. He basically said he was sorry. He said he'd try to answer more questions.
I know that you probably have some more questions. I don't know if I have any more answers for you, but I'll try my best. I'll try.
Good for him. Honestly, I guess that's a classy thing to do. Pete's a classy guy.
And he also told the reporters, I respect the heck out of what you do, and I know you have stories to write, so if I don't talk to you, that makes it hard.
He's just handling it the right way, yeah. Right? Pete's a good guy, and I do have respect for that, even on what really was a terrible day. All right, there you go. That's some takeaways. Whew. Questions are just, there's more questions than answers today. I think that's sort of the problem. And I kind of keep coming back to this Larry Stone column because I think Larry's pretty measured. And he's a good columnist, but he's not our, you know, rip everybody left and right, lead the way with asking tough questions. That's not what Larry is. He comes from a different school. He's very measured and thoughtful. And for Larry Stone, of all people, to say, is it over? Is this the end of an era? That's a powerful question. Like, if I say that, you're probably going to laugh at me. Like, eh, sulk, whatever. He's just being hot-headed. Sure. If Howdy says that, of course you laugh. He says garbage like that every day. Right? I mean, like, but I get it. I'm hot-headed. Like, there are times where you're going to sort of laugh at me and be like, eh, we'll see what happens. Cooler heads may prevail. I'm not always the coolest head. But Larry is. Larry Stone might be the coolest head in the room. At all times. I've never even seen Larry, like, flustered. He's such a, like, cool, level-headed dude.
Does that mean you're, like, putting more credence in the thought of the question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of putting people into buckets. If Steve Kelly were the columnist writing that, I'd be like, Steve's kind of an instigator. And I say that with love and respect. That's a great role. That's an important job for a lot of columnists. And if Steve Kelly said, end of an era, I'd be like, eh, we'll see. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's actually over.
I just want to know why we're not asking the tough questions.
In a fertilized octopus egg ingest.
It's enough. I can't hear that guy drunk anymore. It's throwing me off my game. But when Larry Stone says end of an era, yeah, my ears are open to that one for sure. Because that is a measured, thoughtful guy. Now I feel like I'm going to start talking like that, dude. That is a measured...
Did he just say a fertilized octopus egg?
Listen, man. Fact or fiction, beyond belief.
It's 8:15. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Maybe it was a Kraken thing. Fertilized octopus egg or something like that.
Just a little foreshadowing. That's all it was.
It's coming up as the third need to know. Let's start with the Seahawks. Outplayed in every conceivable way yesterday by a division rival, playing without its star quarterback, wide receiver, and defensive end in a game they absolutely had to have. They didn't even show up. No excuses after this one. No officials to blame. No injuries you're waiting on to heal. Just no scheme issues. No coaching decisions. They got beat. Flat out beat. Their roster was not as good as Arizona's, and I thought it was very obvious over 60 minutes. 23-13, your final. Couple of scores in this one. It could have been a lot worse. Thankfully, Arizona missed three kicks on the day. Outside of that quick touchdown drive that offered a little bit of hope, the Seahawks just never really looked in this one. 328 yards they gave up to Colt McCoy. They mustered only 45 offensive plays. So just to contrast that, McCoy threw the ball 44 times. The Seahawks ran 45 plays. Yikes. Just 2 of 10 on third down. By contrast, the Cardinals were 7 of 14. And while they were, you know, largely quiet this year in terms of adding players midseason, just Sidney Jones, the Cardinals got 88 yards from Zach Ertz, who they added mid-year, giving up just a rookie corner and a fifth-round pick. So, yeah, there are some real problems. Some credit to be doled out as well. The defense played hard, kept them nominally in the game for 58 minutes. But again, on the final stand they had to make, they whiffed on a sack, gave up a key third down, and then took a penalty in the end zone after they got a gift with a reverse call. Hey, can't do that. Russell Wilson, certainly more accurate than last week, but again, constantly under pressure, unable to escape, looked once again in between 13 points, not going to cut it in the NFL. And Pete Carroll, not even sure where to go next.
I don't know why it became a mystery to us to score points. I mean, that's never been the issue, and we've always been able to move the ball and score and stuff. So I don't know why this time frame. You know, it started when Russ got banged up, and it hasn't. We just haven't got productive, you know, like we need to be, and we got to get back on track.
They're now 3-7, playoffs essentially out of reach for this group. They'll have 7 games to play for pride and to figure out what next year will look like. Unfamiliar territory for Russell Wilson, obviously. But it may determine whether this is his team next year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, if you thought just removing the coach would fix everything that ailed the Huskies, guess what? It didn't. There was some good news. Quarterback Dylan Moore is thrown for 387 yards on Saturday. That did come with a couple of picks, 4 turnovers for the team on the day, and just another loss, 20-17 in Colorado. Means they fall to 4-7 on the year, guaranteed a losing season, no bowl eligibility. As they search for a new coach, lots of other openings out there. This weekend, Florida let go of Dan Mullen, so we'll keep watching for moves at ASU, Cal, UCLA, etc. Plus, of course, you got the opening at USC and LSU. Washington State looking for a head coach, but interim guy Jake Dickert sure making a case for the job. His Cougs blew out Arizona Friday night, became bowl eligible in the process. No mean feat either, considering the outside distractions this year. Big night for Max Borgi, 139 yards, 2 scores. Jaden Delora was pretty good. He threw for 4 touchdowns. So, yeah, sets up kind of an odd Apple Cup on Friday in Seattle. Huskies just trying to salvage dignity. Cougs trying to improve their bowl invite. Do they have a chance to win the Pac-12 North in that game? If they win and Oregon loses, I think they may actually win the Pac-12 North. Pretty crazy. Rough look for the Pac-12 as Oregon did fall badly to Utah, 38-7, the final there.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Good read by Schwartz, open ice. He and Kelly Yarncroke, who has it. He'll tangle in, cut across, shoot one, he scores! How about that? Kelly Yarncroke is off the schneid with his first of the season, Porto. one, Seattle.
Yeah, he had been largely invisible despite playing on the top line and with some pretty good goal scorers at times. Had seen nothing from...
Along with the boy Cali, though.
Yeah, he hadn't done much. The boy Cali, though. Finally coming up with a couple of points in that game. Give the Kraken some credit in general. They battled hard last night, found a way to beat a very good Washington team that had been hot coming in. Yes, they were on the back end of back-to-backs, but still, the win breaks a six-game losing streak. I thought the whole weekend was strange. Dave Hakstol called out his goalie after the loss to Chicago. Then he didn't play him against his old team, the Avs. Then they got their doors blown out in that game, and Hakstol had to throw him back in the game midway. Then he canceled practice on Saturday. The whole thing was a mess. I would not have been surprised if they just got blown out again and kind of quit last night. And instead, they did the opposite. They weren't flat. They carried play for nearly the entire 60 minutes. Grubauer was the best he's been, I think, all year, and they win 5-2. Goals from five different players. Carolina will be here on Wednesday. NBA action. Clippers, Lakers, Bulls, Suns, Warriors all win. LeBron ejected from that game against the Pistons. And Jerry DePoto still waiting on him. Let's go, Jerry. Let's get something done here in the offseason. Single game tickets do go on sale Wednesday at Mariners.com. It's everything you need to know.
What were you saying about the Pac-12 North?
I don't know.
If somebody would have won.
I blacked out. Okay. I think if the Cougs win... And Oregon loses, the Cougs win the Pac-12 North. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Well, no. Oregon State's 7-4 overall, but in the conference they're 5-3. Well,
that's all that matters. Just look at the conference.
Conference is 5-3. Cougs are 5-3. Or sorry, Oregon State and the Cougs are 5-3. Oregon is 6-2.
Yeah. So I think if the Cougs beat Oregon State. So I think if the Cougs win and Oregon loses, the Cougs win the Pac-12 North, and they get to play, and then keep going and see what they're capable of. That'd be great.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that? Right? Considering everything that's gone on with that team this year, I think that's pretty remarkable. Very remarkable.
And Apple Cup's going to be weird.
It is, right? I mean, neither team with their head coach, two interim coaches. It's crazy. I tell you what, Dickert has made quite the impression. If they win the Apple Cup and do end up playing for the Pac-12 North, if they end up playing for the Pac-12 championship,
are
you going to bring somebody else in?
A victory against Washington and the Apple Cup combined with an Oregon State win against Oregon gets them the Pac-12.
Oh, because, Oregon plays Oregon State this week. So at that point, the Cougs would win the North.
Wow.
That'd be great. That'd be pretty
cool.
Yeah, I think at that point, all three teams will have beaten each other because the Cougs lost to Oregon. Oregon will have lost to Oregon State, and the Cougs beat Oregon State. So it must go to something else, and somehow they win that tiebreaker.
It would go to a three-way tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And they would have a better record against Pac-12 North teams.
Ah.
4-1 than the Ducks and the Beavers, who are 3-2.
Ah, there you go. That's always, it's always the last place you look is your record against the Pac-12 North. All right. We have about an hour before Pete. What do you guys want to do? You want to talk together? You want to try to figure out what's gone wrong? There's like...
A little group therapy?
It's like overwhelming a little bit today. There's a couple of key questions, though, that I'll ask. If you guys want to jump in on the phones, we'll see if we can grab some calls. I want to see if we can get to the bottom of a few, really big picture questions that seem to have us just, they have Pete stumped. I've got the palms up, just like Pete. So we'll see if we can answer them together. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Things don't look good today, huh? It's like...
I wonder where you were there for a minute.
Well, I'm here. Things don't look good.
Yeah, what makes you say that? Just trying to... Not
it's just
not
like the combo, right? I mean, Seahawks and Huskies and just kind of stick it all together. It doesn't look great, right? I mean, you're talking about the Kraken. I know they get the win last night. They're struggling, man. These days where it feels like one thing is on top of another, and you're just not really sure. Like, being a sports fan is supposed to be fun, and there are days where it doesn't feel that way. I'm so excited about where the Mariners are going and what they're doing. But yeah, Brock's right. This impending lockout kind of calls a lot of that into question and how they're going to be able to do what they need to do. Like, I think those are very real concerns right now, right? And then the Seahawks. I mean, what the heck are they going to do to turn this thing around? I mean, we can talk through kind of what the problem is, and I guess you can't figure out how to fix it until you decide what the problem is. But again, I'll keep this open for you guys. You guys want to jump in on it, 206-421-3776. Phone lines are open. Text the same thing. Mac and Jack's text line there. First of all, what's going on with Russell Wilson? What's going on with Russ? You guys have an answer for this question. What is going on with Russell Wilson? Why does he look like this? Why does he not look like the same Russell Wilson we've seen for 10 years? He didn't forget how to play football. He didn't just get bad. So why does he not look like Russell Wilson? I don't know that I know the answer. I certainly don't think Pete knows the answer right now. I don't know that Russ does either. This one drove me nuts.
I felt like we had some good chances, you know, on some things, and things didn't go our way. A couple plays here and there. I felt like, you know, we could have played a little bit sharper, you know, and I think that for me, the standard's always high. You know, the standard's always to find a way to win. That's what it's really about. I think that one of the things that we did well was, you know, picking up the tempo and moving the ball really well. We went up and down the field right before half, and then, you know, near the end of the game there, we responded really well with that. And I think that we have to figure out how to tap into that a little bit more, maybe.
Is this Russell's first day?
Tap into the tempo a little bit more?
I just, honestly, is this your first day here? Is this your first day watching the NFL? Oh, you know, this is something I would expect from, like, you know, Joe and Burian, who calls in one day and is like, oh, they look great in 2 minutes. Drill, why don't they run more? Russell, you're a professional quarterback. You can't be serious. Oh, well, we did pretty well in 2 minute drill. Maybe we should just do more of that. Everyone does well in 2 minute drill. It's the NFL.
Joe and Burian do good in 2 minute drill.
Joe and Burian have a sweet 2 minute drill.
One of the responses to your tweet about what's going on with Russ. KMill31691. People saying Russ stinks now are out of their minds. He's had a couple bad games coming off an injury. Whoa, he's human. The coaching / scheme and protection are atrocious.
You know what? Hold on. No one's saying Russ stinks. He has stunk for the last few games. Why? So you shouldn't ask? I just cut him a break.
No, I think he's answering. The coaching and scheme and protection are atrocious.
So there you go. Okay, fine. That's an answer at least. Coaching, scheme. So it's everything but Russ. Russ is fine. Everyone else
coaching,
is to blame.
Scheme, coaching / scheme and protection.
All right. I think there's some truth to that. A lot of truth to the protection thing. Quarterbacks have to have enough protection in order to throw. But that's all of it?
And then another one.
That doesn't sound quite right either.
At Jesh Anderson, scheme doesn't make you miss open receivers over and over again.
No. I didn't think he did that. I thought he was much more accurate this week. I didn't see the inaccuracy issues that he had the previous week against Green Bay. I thought he was reasonably accurate. He just didn't throw to open receivers very often. Some of that's on him. Some of it's on them. Question number one for you guys, 206-421-3776. What's going on with Russ? Question number two, why are we here? I don't mean like existentially. But, like, why are we where we're at with the Seahawks at 3-7? I went through this NFL standings earlier. I'll do it again. I'm not afraid. I mean, I am. It's terrible. If Bill Parcells says you are what your record says you are, your record says you're 3-7, fifth worst record in the league. The only teams with a worse record than you are the Lions, Jets, Jaguars, and Texans. By far the four worst teams in football. The Lions, Jets, Jaguars, and Texans. Four organizations that are completely lost at sea. Seriously. Not just their roster, not just their coach. Those organizations, those franchises are lost at sea. The Lions haven't had a good team in as long as I've been alive. The Jets are a joke. The Jaguars don't even look like they want him. They hired Urban Meyer, for God's sakes, and then didn't fire him after everything that went down. And the Texans, look what's going on there. Their quarterback and their former I mean, they're a disaster. Those are arguably, I don't even know if it's arguable. Are those just flat out the four worst organizations in the NFL?
I think Detroit is leaps and bounds ahead of the others.
Oof.
In terms of worst.
I don't know.
Jacksonville's, what, 3 years out of being in the playoffs?
But they're a bad organization,
okay.
Man. These are four bad organizations. They're broken. I guess we'd probably put Washington in there, but at least they've got the history. I mean, those four organizations are broken. They're the only four organizations right now that have a worse record than the Seahawks. Why? Why are we here? What's the number one reason the Seahawks are where they are? Give me one. Boil it down to the number one reason the Seahawks are where they are. I'll give you my answer. Too many mistakes on the roster. I'm going to pin this one on the construction of the roster. If you give me one, there's more, but one, too many missed draft picks, too many bad free agent signings, too much money spent on players that aren't doing what you need them to do. Flat out. Simple as day. Bad drafts almost every year since 2012. Can't win like that. Can't win like that. Not consistently. Russell can only cover up so many holes for so long. Roster's not good enough. And so right now, the only teams with a worse record than you are the four worst organizations in all of the sport. And some of these teams that, honestly, I laugh at. I laugh at the Falcons. They're 4-6. They got a better record. We laugh at Washington, 4-6. Right? The Broncos have no idea what they're doing. They traded Von Miller. They quit on the year, 5-5. The Eagles are a joke, 5-6. The Niners we've laughed at from forever. Quarterback issues, etc. Yeah, they're 5-5. They're 5-5. The Browns, 6-5. I mean, like all these teams that you can kind of, the Raiders and everything they've had gone wrong, 5-5. And somehow the Seahawks are 3-7, fifth worst in the league. And usually the one upside of that is, hey, you're finally going to get to have a top pick. They didn't even get it because they've already traded it away to the Jets for Jamal Adams, who's not good. 206-421-3776. Why are we here, Bo and Baton? Oh, Bo. What's up, Bo? Formerly Bo in L.A., now Bo in Baton Rouge.
Bo in the Bayou. Hey, I don't have a linear thing here. I'm with you. I'm a little stuck, but I would boil it down to we don't have a clear offensive identity, and we all know Russ has not been good with the short stuff and over the middle of the field. So I think when you're a little indecisive and then you're not great at the things the defense are giving you, you just don't look good. He just isn't in rhythm. He's not playing to his strength.
But let me ask you another question, though. I'll play professor for a moment. Okay, good answer. No offensive identity. But then I've got to, unfortunately, ask the next question to get us deeper. Why don't they have an offensive identity?
Well, what I would say is, and I know you've been talking about this, I think there's a tug of war between Pete, Russ, the new OC, and I think they just can't commit to either being fully run first and then doing the play action off it or being that quick game, gunslinging, like we saw even with Colt McCoy yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals are clear how they want to play the game. You see watching the Seahawks offense, like they're tug-of-warring. Like, are we a deep shot team? Are we going to try to run the ball? Are we going to try to do the quick game? I don't know. This doesn't feel good. We missed this one. Now let's change it the next series. They don't seem proactively on purpose with their offensive game plan. It's weird.
It is. I appreciate the phone call, man. Good to hear from you again. It's been a while. So, no, I think there's a lot to that. I'm a big identity guy. I believe that once you have an identity, you know what to do in a given situation. Like, you can hate on a guy like Bryson DeChambeau, right? But that guy knows what he wants to be. His job every time, what do I want to do? Hit the driver as hard as I damn can and then hit a wedge in. Even if I'm in the rough. That's what he is. Like, he knows what the identity is. So that when you get to 18 and you've got a, you know, one-stroke lead and you're in between, he's not in between. He knows what he is. He's a bomber. He's not going to lay up with a 7-iron on 18. He's going to hit the driver. That's who he is. Live or die by what you are. What are the Seahawks right now? If you don't have that, then how do you know what to do on 18?
Right, this is like death by a thousand paper cuts.
Right? Like, if you don't know who you are, then when you're struck by a big decision, you're not sure which direction to go. That's a problem. Let me grab John is in Normandy Park. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How's it going, man?
What's up, man? Why are we here?
Well, I think it's no secret to anybody that from the 12 to 14 seasons, Pete and John basically won the Powerball and caught lightning in a bottle with the drafts. And I think yesterday I was at the game and I watched a 16-play drive on the first drive and just kept thinking back. He's coaching the squad like he has a 2013 roster. They don't have that. They don't have guys on the edge that can get to the quarterback. They don't have shutdown corners. I mean, granted, we're dealing with injuries like every squad is. But My thing is they panicked and overpaid and overtraded for Jamal Adams to try to find an Earl Cam fill-in, and mm-hmm. it's not working. And it's just it's scary and pathetic and sad all in one. It's just a ball of emotions, and it's a terrible Monday.
Yeah, it isn't a good day, that's for sure, man. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for hanging out together and hopefully making it a little bit easier. All right, let's hang on the line. I want to get back to some of these calls in just a few minutes. I want to talk to John Clayton first, obviously. It's 8:45. We got to hear from John and see what his answer is to some of these questions, because you're looking at a Seahawks team that John came on this air after week one and said they look like a Super Bowl team. How has it gone so far so fast? So we'll talk to John, and we'll keep trying to answer this question together. How did we get here? Why are we here? Because we're here. Roll the bones. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
How bad was yesterday?
Really bad. I mean, but the thing is, it's like a recurring nightmare week in and week out with the offense, and it doesn't get better. I mean, look at what happened, whether it's, you know, Geno Smith and now even Russell Wilson. You know, third down conversions, terrible. They don't get enough offensive plays. They're the worst in football as far as getting offensive plays. Their defense is on the field more than any other team in the league, and it's 2-1 pretty much in most games, so they wear down in the middle of the fourth quarter. You can see on third downs, Russell looks lost.
Yeah, so what ultimately, where do you point the finger? Is it coaching? Is it
everything.
Russell? Is it roster? I mean, like, what's the problem?
Everything.
Well, how do you fix it?
You may not be able to fix it this year.
Well, how do you fix it in general? Yeah, it's too late for this year, but what has to happen for them to move forward?
Well, I mean, what they have to do is figure out, you know, what they want to do at the running game position, you know, because again, they got Alex Collins, who looks good, but what they don't have is, I mean, you know, isn't it amazing that Rashad Perry ends up getting hurt again? And so now he's got a little bit of a hamstring, so you kind of scratch that. And so he's up at the end of the year. Collins is up at the end of the year. You have three starting offensive linemen who are up. I mean, Gerald Everett is up. So you're almost in the state where
you're in the rebuilding process. But, John, you have major – this team has major problems.
Agreed.
I don't know if just fixing the running back spot is going to fix what ails this team.
No, agreed.
So, like, that's the big question. How mm-hmm. are you going to fix this team? I mean, Larry Stone, who is – look, you know Larry well. Also, Larry is not Skip Bayless. He's not exactly a hot take guy. For Larry to write, "This is the end of an era" yesterday.
Oh, that's too much.
You think so?
Yeah, but I think they have to go through a rebuilding process. There's no question about it. You know, they've got, you know, now in the league, there's like about on the average 20 to 21 players that are unrestricted free agents. This team has about 18, but so many of those are on offense. And then you make matters worse when you lose your top two cornerbacks. You know, because Trey Brown looked really good. Mm-hmm. Now he has the patellar tendon injury, so he's probably out for the rest of the season. You don't know about DJ Reed, but DJ's contract is up at the end of the year, so it's like you got those issues. But the big thing is figuring out the offense. And you know, with Russell Wilson right now, I mean, you can see that he's totally affected, you know, by the hand, by the finger injury. He can still make some.
God, John, I totally disagree with you. I couldn't disagree with you more. I thought Russ looked totally accurate yesterday.
On third down, he wasn't.
The balls he was throwing went to where he wanted them to go. He was accurate with the football. He just didn't have open receivers, nor was he throwing it to the right people.
Well, I mean,
that was decision making. That was not accuracy.
Yeah, but I mean, some of the throws were high on the third downs. I mean, not on the first and second
down. I saw one bad throw in the game on the slant, and I don't think anybody was open. I thought he just kind of kind of double clutched it almost. Deep ball was great to Lockett. Deep ball was great to DK Metcalf. I mean, like, I didn't have any issues with the way Russ threw it. I didn't think that there was, like, any juice to the offense in that mm-hmm. one.
No, I agree. But also, I think what you're seeing is that look at what happens on third down, and that's where I think, you know, Russ right now isn't getting good vision on what's there.
Okay.
And then on top of it, you know, the pass, you know, the pass blocking was terrible.
Yeah. Why is the offensive line still so bad?
Well, because, again, you can see that the Cardinals are actually pretty good.
They are.
Yeah, because, again, you know, Marcus Golden has 10 sacks. I mean, you know that Chandler Jones has, you know, 12 and a half sacks in this city, which, of course, in this stadium, you know, he's got the 10th most sacks of any player.
That's amazing.
Which is just amazing, and they can't block him.
No, and they didn't even have J.J. Watt, obviously,
no, they
who's
didn't.
Done for the year. I don't know, man. I watched Russ in that game. I thought in the Green Bay game he was inaccurate. I thought his finger looked like it was still hurting him.
Right.
I watched him this week. I didn't think that. I thought that their offense just looked anemic and unable to generate it. His like there was somebody in his face almost constantly. Mm-hmm. There were throwaways. There were rushed throws. He wasn't able to escape much. It's really hard for me to fathom that the same Russell Wilson I've watched for a decade is the same guy we're seeing right now.
No, we're not. And then, you know, I know one stat that came out this morning is that if you go back over the last 17 games, you know, and again, I'm not critical of Russell because, again, he's such a great quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. But it's like he's 8-9.
That's hard to fathom.
Yeah, and the offense has been now, you can say, particularly from the second half of the season last year mm-hmm. to now, has been worse than special teams and the defense.
So do you see this as more of a coaching and scheme issue or more of a roster talent issue?
I think it's more of a roster talent issue than it is anything else.
I think that's where we agree.
Yeah, because, again, it's like they've you know, with three starters on the offensive line up at the end of the year, because Posick's up, Brandon Shell's up, and Dwayne Brown's up, they've got to figure out something there. And then, I mean, you look at all the other entities, and, again, they got two great wide receivers. There's no question about that in DK Metcalf mm-hmm. and Tyler Lockett. I mean, they're great. But they're not getting the ball as consistent as you would like. And, you know, I thought Lockett had a good game yesterday. You know, Metcalf was close to having a good game, but did not. And that's where, you know, they've got to start to figure some things out. That may go more to coaching than anything else.
Yeah, there's obviously, to say that one thing is more of an issue than the other doesn't mean the other thing's not an issue. I mean,
right.
I think there's plenty of blame to be spread around. But when you go through all of the top picks that they've had, mm-hmm. And how few of them have worked out since 2012, it really creates a picture of a team that has not drafted well for more than a decade. I don't know how you survive in the NFL without drafting well.
Well, because, but again, that's symptomatic of making the playoffs. When you make the playoffs...
No, it's not just that.
No, it is.
It's not just
that. It is.
It's not just that. It's partly that. You're right. You're right, John. They've drafted late in the round. But the guys they've gotten still haven't done anything.
Yeah, but
LJ Collier, drafting him in the first round. Yeah, he's a late first round pick, but that doesn't mean he should be scratched every week. Rashad Penny should give you more than two carries every once in a while, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Malik McDowell never played a down for you. Jermaine Ifedi was a disaster. Kristen Michael was a mess. Marquise Blair has done nothing. I mean, like, that's not just because you made the playoffs. Those guys all failed.
But they're second-round picks. And then when you draft a player as a playoff team, in the anything after 20, you're getting second-round picks in the first round. That's why John Snyder always prefers to trade down, get the extra picks, and try to do it that way.
But don't you have to hit on some of those picks?
Well, let's put it this way. I chart this every year, and 25 of the picks that are after 20 don't get second contracts, usually don't go great, and maybe only two, maybe three at the most, go to the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's just symptomatic of the way it is.
John, in a decade, since the 2012 draft, so starting 2013, the Seahawks have hit on two players.
What about Bruce Irvin?
That's 2012.
Okay.
So after that draft, 2013 mm-hmm. and beyond, they hit on Frank Clark for sure, top-notch player. They hit on Tyler Lockett, and then they hit on DK Metcalf. There's three.
But Lockett's a second-round pick.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
Second, third. I mean, like, those are still supposed to be pretty good quality players. And Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and, like, all of the guys, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, those are all second, third, fourth, fifth-round picks.
Whatever it was, they still won 12 games last year.
And I think so much of it is just Russell covering up the warts on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when Russell doesn't do that anymore because of whether it's his finger or some insecure, whatever it is,
it really exposes a roster that can't even compete with Arizona, who's missing its three best players.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Arizona's done a good job of making trades and upgrading. I mean, the Zach Ertz trade
for sure
looks great right now. Again, it's one season. You can't overdo one season.
John, great stuff. We're going to continue this tomorrow. I'm already looking forward to it. Good job. It was fun today. Let's get after it. All right, there you go. John Clayton, every morning at 8:45. Somebody was trying to call me egotistical here on the text machine and said I'm an estrogenic clown. And I don't know what that means, but I don't want to be that.
I had to look it up. I was wondering the same thing. We were back here going, what?
I'm guessing that was supposed to be egotistical, but I like the idea that I'm estrogenic. I think.
I'm hoping it was supposed to be egotistical.
It has something to do with hormones, so maybe that has something to do. Maybe that is it. Maybe I'm being hormonal. Who knows? All right, we had some people on the phone. See if we can get back to it. John and I are fighting about it. You guys can jump in on this as well. Why are we here? John says it's the roster, but he won't actually say that, like, there were mistakes made in building the roster. There were. I don't care whether you're a first, second, or third round pick. There's still more of them are supposed to work out than, like, three in a decade. Where are the players? Where are the guys that can step in? Where are they? I'm going to point to the roster. I think the Seahawks looked overmatched. In a word, why did the Seahawks lose the game? They were overmatched. The Cardinals were better across the board. Just more talented. What did you guys see? 206-421-3776, 710 ESPN Seattle.